As we think this Veterans Day about the wars our nation has been involved in, so many really, it's a challenge to put ourselves back into the feeling of 1939. World War II was just underway in Europe. It had seemed inevitable for some time over there. For the United States, it was publicly clear that this country wanted nothing to do with another round of slaughter across the Atlantic. But we would help our allies, and we geared our industries to back France and Britain. It was all out of fear of Germany, a fear that is easy to call up now, knowing what we do about the Holocaust. But back then, historian James Holland says in his new book, The Rise of Germany, 1939-1941, the first of a three-volume study, he says that Hitler's military strength was actually an unknown. His conclusion is that Hitler's demise was actually in the cards from the beginning. His book has been banned in Russia by Vladimir Putin. Putin says any claim that Hitler was weak undercuts the Russian claim that it was the Soviet military that brought Germany to defeat.
I mean, I still think the kind of decision by Hitler to go into Poland on the 1st of September 1939 was possibly the most catastrophic of all the decisions he made. You know, because he was calling Britain and France's bluff, and they'd had enough. You know, they were not going to stand by anymore. And as a result of that, he went into a war which, you know, certainly on paper, he should never have won, because Germany was so resource poor. And I think one of the interesting things about where we are now in the historiography of the narrative of the Second World War, World War II, is that, you know, people just assume that America entered the war kind of fully formed, the arsenal of democracy, and it wasn't like that at all. I mean, it was a really long struggle to get to that position.
Well, the arc in the United States that you describe, you know, begins with ambivalence about who do we support here, to a mobilization of the U.S. economy that was so massive that it ended the Depression and created industries that had never existed before. Tell that story through some of the people who really made the decisions that we live today.
Yeah, it is just the most astonishing story, because what you have to remember, on the eve of the Second World War, America had an army that was around 189,000, which by sort of standards in the UK today seems quite big, but trust me, by 1939 standards was absolutely tiny. And I think the US Army Air Force had 74 fighter planes, no more than that. You know, so you're talking really, really, really tiny. There was no concept of all arms combat, of sort of using tanks with artillery, with infantry like that, or anything like that. I mean, it was incredibly backward, really behind, very insular. And there was a sort of extraordinary logic to that, which is that if you have a very small armed services, then the chances are you're not going to go to war. And no one in America wanted to go to war. There was a kind of, you know, that whole isolationist thing was a very conscious decision made in the fallout of the First World War, kind of a generation earlier.
Don't have an army, don't go to war. It's funny how that works.
Right. Yeah. It does. Yeah. And conversely, the same is true. If you do have a massive army, you tend to go to war, as you guys will know all about in the last sort of 15, 20 years.
Was Hitler a pushover in your view? The Russians are pretty angry with some of your historical analysis because of the way you suggest that Russia didn't have a terribly serious task in front of it.
No, I don't think that's true. I mean, you know, the war in the East is of enormous importance, because that's where Germany really properly bleeds itself dry on the ground. The thing about the war in the East is that Hitler wouldn't have turned east had he not lost the Battle of Britain in 1940. You know, the worst-case scenario for Germany is fighting a war on two fronts, because the way Germans fight the war is always to make them as quick as possible. It's a sort of massive amount of force at the Schwerpunkt, the point of impact. You overwhelm your enemies, you completely surround them and annihilate them. It's the principle behind the opening moves in the First World War, and it's, you know, nothing has changed. And the reason is because they're isolated in Central Europe. They're cut off from the world's sea lanes. And, you know, they're resource poor. So they have to get these wars won very, very quickly. And if they don't, they're in big trouble.
What do you think of this ban? Why do you think the Russians would be so annoyed with your book?
Oh, I don't think they're particularly annoyed with my book. I think the point about Putin banning it is that he's an ultra-nationalist, and ultra-nationalists always want to control their history. You know, every nation has its own myths about its past, and that's part of its sort of collective heritage and cultural myths. I mean, we saw this in the UK last year with the whole election, you know, the whole referendum about whether Scotland would split. Putin's doing exactly the same. It fits his own purpose of Russian nationalism to big up the Great Patriotic War and kind of sideline any kind of Western analysis.
So if you look at the legacy of World War II, I mean, the United States was already the biggest economy in the world by the time you get to 1939. But you get the sense from this story and the way that you tell it that the U.S. would not have been a superpower in the way that we understand it today but for the decision to bring it into the war.
Yeah, I mean, playing the whole what-if card is always a fascinating sort of parlor game, isn't it? And, you know, what would have happened? Well, I don't know. I mean, I can see a situation where Nazi Germany would have dominated Europe. I think it would find it very, very hard to obliterate Britain, to be honest, because of Britain's global reach. So I think Britain would have held on, probably. But America, no. I mean, it wouldn't have become the nation necessarily right. that it has become. I mean, in the big scheme of things, I mean, Britain and America both fought incredibly efficient wars. They fought wars which were, you know, steel, not flesh, primarily. You know, they tried to put mechanization and industrialization first and foremost and keep the number of people at the coalface of war to an absolute bare minimum. And as a result of that, you know, Britain ends up the war after 6 years of war, where it's been fighting all around the world and in numerous different theaters with, you know, a casualty bill of 440,000. And I think the US is about 415,000. Compare that to Germany, 9 million. Soviet Union, 20 to 30 million. China, 20 to 30 million. Japan, 15 million. I mean, you know, it's in a different league.
But it's so interesting just to kind of crystallize in my mind. I mean, at the end of World War II, France is still France. Britain is still Britain. Germany is changed forever. I mean, shattered. It's the idea that Germany was ever going to be a threat in the way that it was would never happen again. Japan changed forever. But the United States also changed forever. It doesn't resemble what it was before 1939.
No, it's amazing, those 6 years of war. And it's why I think it continues to be so compellingly fascinating, because it's not just military history. It's social history. It's human drama of the highest caliber. It's economic history. It's political history. It's got so many nuances and facets to it. You know, that's what compels me to the subject. Mm. You know, 6 years is nothing. You know, how long were we in Afghanistan? 13 years or something?
And counting.
Yeah, right. But Hitler thinks of the world in terms of black and white. It's kind of the Thousand-Year Reich or it's Armageddon. When it's clearly not going to be the Thousand-Year Reich, it becomes Armageddon. And anyone walking through the shattered ruins of Germany in April or May 1945, no one would have doubted that Armageddon had reached Germany. I mean, just unbelievable. I mean, one of the most amazing stories is what happens in the years following. I mean, it's just it's every bit as awful and tragic as the years that preceded it.
James Holland is historian and author of The Rise of Germany, 1939 to 1941. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.